Tyrone walked through the bunkhouse just after dawn.
Brew, Jake, Crack, you boys wake up. Come on, get up, get up. This day's half over.
Crack rolled over.
Oh, damn, Tyrone, don't you ever sleep?
Yeah, I sleep when it's dark, and I'm awake when it's light. If you hadn't stayed up till midnight last night, you'd be all rested and ready to go now.
Midnight? We was all in bed by 10 o'clock. You know that. You was right here with us.
As far as I'm concerned, 10 o'clock is damn near midnight. Now, come on. Everybody get up. We have to feed the horses.
Oh, can't they eat grass like every other horse in the world does?
It's your fault.
What do you mean it's my fault?
You're the one that pointed out to me that there are too many of them put into too small a field.
Yeah, but you said there was enough grass for a few days.
Well, there probably is. But I think we should get some hay out there for them anyway, just in case.
Those damn horses live better than we do. They get their breakfast in bed.
Oh, you want breakfast in bed? I'll be glad to bring you breakfast in bed.
Really? Yeah. You do that, I might feel more like getting up this morning.
All right, I'll get you a handful of hay right now.
Serve that hay with some bacon and eggs, and I might just take you up on it.
Prue sat up and rolled out of bed.
I have some coffee in the office. You boys can grab yourselves a cup before you come out to the barn. Then, as soon as you get the hay out, you can come back for breakfast.
That sure was nice of Ms. Wellington to throw us that party last night.
And to actually dance with us? Who'd have thought a lady like that would dance with regular hands like us?
One of the new hands raised up on his elbows.
Well, I heard tell it was a time when she done more than just dance with cowboys.
The hands looked over toward the speaker.
You need to watch that mouth of yours, Asa.
What? What'd I say? Are you boys saying you don't know that our boss lady used to be a whore?
Folks say she was the best-looking whore in the kitchen.
Asa, there's no need for you to help the boys this morning.
What do you mean there's no need?
I mean, you don't work here anymore. In fact, why don't you just gather your tack and get on out of here now?
Well, you can't fire me.
Crack turned to Asa.
Yeah, he can. Believe me, Asa, Tyrone can fire you.
I can't believe this. I tell the truth about something. You want to fire me?
I just want to, Asa. I did fire you.
Well, how am I going to go? Shank's mare? You know I don't have no horse of my own. The horse I'm riding belongs to the ranch.
You can ride your horse into town. Just leave it at the livery. We'll pick it up later. And Asa, if I go down to the livery and find that you didn't leave the horse, I'll see that you are hunted down and tried as a horse thief.
All right, all right. I don't want to work for no damn whore anyway.
Crack stepped up to Asa then and without another word knocked Asa down.
What the hell was that for?
Asa lay on his back rubbing his chin.
I just didn't want you to leave without something to remember us by.
And Asa, if word gets back to us that you're talking about Mrs. Wellington, I guarantee you, you'll get a lot more than a punch on the chin.
I've never seen such a bunch of...
A bunch of what?
Asa rubbed his chin and looked into the glaring faces of the other hands.
Nothing. I'm going.
Crack brought Jake along on the wagon to drive up to the 5-acre field. When they got to the field, Crack reined to a stop. Jake spun around in the seat.
Where are the damn horses? Hell, last night they filled the field. Now I don't see a damn one.
Crack scratched his chin.
They're probably all gathered around the creek. We just can't see them because they're below the rise.
Jake stood up in the wagon, put his fingers to his mouth.
Even if they were below the rise, I should be able to see them by standing up here on the wagon seat like this. Drive on up there, Crack.
Crack slapped the reins against the back of the team and the wagon lurched forward. When they reached the crest of the rise, they stopped. From their vantage point, they not only saw that all the horses were gone, they saw why they were gone.
The damn fence fell down.
Fell down, hell. Look at it. It was took down.
Matt and Kitty were still at their breakfast and making plans for the trip to Chicago when Tyrone Canfield stepped into the dining room.
Good morning, Tyrone. Have the men recovered from the party last night? I hope they had as good a time as I did.
Kitty's smile left when she saw the expression on Tyrone's face.
Tyrone, what is it? What's wrong?
They're gone, Mrs. Wellington.
Who's gone? Good heavens, are you talking about the men? Where have they gone?
No, not the men. The horses we put together to ship to Chicago. They're what's gone. Every last damn one of them.
But that can't possibly be. 500 horses. Not even the rustlers ever took that many.
523, to be exact. When Jake and Crack went out to take some hay to them this morning, there wasn't none of them there. At first, I thought maybe they might have found a break in the fence and just wandered back out into the field. But I went down to have a closer look. The fence at the south end of the field, the one we put up yesterday, it hadn't just been broke through by the horses. The fence had been taken down.
Tyrone, I noticed Asa riding out this morning. Is he the one who discovered it?
No. Well, the thing is, I don't know if Asa saw that the horses was gone or not. Even if he had, he probably wouldn't have told us. I fired Asa this morning.
You fired him?
Yes, ma'am. You remember, Mrs. Wellington, you gave me the authority. Asa needed firing.
You're right. I did, so I won't question it now. If you fired him, I'm sure you had a good reason.
Yes, ma'am, I did.
Tyrone, is it possible that Asa might have taken the fence down, then run the horses back out onto the range in anger over being fired?
I wish that was it, Matt. Then all we'd have to do is round him up again. But the truth is, he rode off no more than a couple of minutes before Jake and Crack did. He wouldn't have had time to take the fence down and run off all the horses before Jake and Crack got there. No, sir. These horses was stole.
Rustlers? I thought with Polk Terrell gone that we were through with rustlers.
Kitty sunk back in her chair.
Oh, Matt, what am I going to do? That was more than half my saddle horses. I don't have enough left to meet the terms of the Army contract.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Wellington. I should have put some night riders out, but there hadn't been nothing happened for more than a month now. And what with Polk Terrell dead, well, like you, I just sort of figured that we wouldn't be having no more trouble.
No, Tyrone, you mustn't blame yourself. It isn't your fault. If I had thought we needed night riders, I would have asked you to put them out.
But you shouldn't have had to ask me, Mrs. Wellington. That's the point. I'm the foreman. It's my job to look after things like that.
Listen, you two. We're gonna get them horses back.
Back in Medbury, Clay Sherman stepped into Marshal Sparks' office. Sparks had parts of a kerosene lantern spread out on his desk and was busy trimming the wick. He looked up as Sherman came in.
What can I do for you, Colonel?
No doubt Mrs. Wellington is going to come see you sometime today, reporting that some of her horses have been rustled.
Why do you think that?
Because I took 500 horses from her during the night. The horses she had ready to sell to the Army.
What the hell, Sherman? You steal 500 horses, then you have the audacity to come into my office and tell me about it? What is this, a challenge?
Take it easy. I didn't steal the horses. That's what I came here to tell you.
What do you mean you didn't steal them? Didn't you just tell me you took 500 horses from Kitty Wellington in the middle of the night?
I did.
What is that, other than stealing?
Legal confiscation.
What?
Sherman pulled a piece of paper from his pocket and handed it to Marshal Sparks.
Kitty Wellington was and is in violation of the herd management law. If you'll read this, you'll see that it's a violation to raise anything but cattle in this herd management district, unless you have specific authorization from the Territory and County Herd Management Council. Kitty Wellington has no such authorization. Therefore, I confiscated the horses on behalf of the Territory of Idaho.
I'm sure Mrs. Wellington never even heard of that law. Nor have I.
It's obvious you haven't heard of it, Marshal. If you had, you would have done your duty.
I wouldn't have arrested her. I would have just told her about the law so she could get a permit. I can't imagine the county or the territory, for that matter, withholding one.
It's too late for a permit. The law has been violated. The penalty must be paid.
Where are the horses now?
Oh, that's really none of your concern, Marshal. Let's just say that the horses are somewhere safe.
Sherman?
Colonel Sherman.
Sherman, I may not have known about the herd law, but I do know that before you can confiscate anything, you have to have a court order, and you have to serve it. I'm just guessing, mind you, but I don't believe you served Kitty Wellington a court order. Not in the middle of the night you didn't.
Yes, well, here's the thing, Marshal. My authority differs from yours. Your jurisdiction is limited to Medbury. Mine, on the other hand, extends throughout the entire territory of Idaho. I can issue my own court order and warrants.
As City Marshal of Medbury, I'm also a deputy sheriff for the county of Owyhee, which means I have jurisdiction throughout the county. And I don't believe for one moment that you have the authority to serve a court order in this county, much less issue such an order.
It doesn't make any difference whether you believe it or not, Marshal. I have already exercised my authority, and I came here to tell you about it only as a matter of courtesy. If Kitty Wellington or her hired gun, Matt Jensen, comes to report that their horses are stolen, you might tell them that. Oh, and tell Matt Jensen that if he tries to recover the horses or opposes me or any of my men, we will be within our legal right to kill him.
Matt learned his tracking skills from Smoke Jensen. He learned so well, many said he could track a fish through water. However, it required no particular skill to track the herd of horses the rustlers had taken. Even a novice could have followed the wide band they left, not only tracks, but also their droppings.
That's a good-sized group of rustlers.
But it was the latter, the horse droppings, that provided additional vital information. This information was something that only someone with Matt's skills and education would be able to ascertain. The droppings of the range horses were filled with the Kentucky bluegrass that Kitty imported for her pasture land. But here and there could be found droppings that contained only fescue hay. The hay droppings stood out from the others as if they had little signs attached to them. And those horses, Matt knew, belonged to the rustlers. It was difficult to ascertain just how many rustlers there were, though Matt was sure there were 14 or 15 of them, maybe more. Then, when they crossed Mill Creek, many of the rustlers turned away, leaving only four he could still account for. He was glad to see that none of the range horses had turned away, because if the herd had split, it would make the recovery a lot more difficult.
At least they're staying together.
As he continued to trail the rustlers and the herd, he could tell by a close observation of the droppings that he had nearly caught up with them. The droppings he was seeing now were less than half an hour old. When Matt approached a long, low-lying ridge, he dismounted before he reached the top. Then, with a gesture for Spirit to remain in place, he crawled to the top to look over to the other side. There, in a natural bowl, he saw the horses. The herd was contained on one side by Blue Creek, and on the other three sides by the natural walls of a dead-end canyon. Four mounted men were keeping watch over the horses. Matt returned to Spirit, mounted, and pulled his pistol. Slapping his legs against the side of his horse, he rode up the ridge, then down the other side, his cocked pistol raised.
Hold it right there!
George Gilmore was bent over some papers on his desk when Marshal Sparks stepped into his office. He looked up in surprise.
Marshal Sparks, is something wrong?
I don't know. Maybe nothing. But something is going on that I don't feel right about.
What is it?
Are you aware that Clay Sherman and his so-called auxiliary peace officers posse are in town?
Who isn't aware? That's all anyone in town has been talking about ever since they arrived, wondering why they're here.
I think I know why. Have you ever heard of something called the Herd Management Law?
No, I can't say that I have.
This is why they're here.
Sparks handed Gilmore the paper Sherman had given him.
According to Sherman, they're here to enforce the herd management law.
Gilmore perused the document for a moment, then handed it back to the sheriff.
Enforce it in what way?
Last night, Sherman and his men visited Kitty Wellington's ranch and took 500 head of her horses. Confiscated the horses is how Sherman put it. He confiscated the horses on behalf of the territory of Idaho because he claims by running horses, she was in violation of the herd management law. Though why he confiscated exactly 500 rather than serving a notice that he was confiscating the entire herd, I don't know.
I do.
Well, then I wish you would tell me.
500 head is the number of horses Mrs. Wellington has contracted to furnish the army. He took those horses to prevent her from fulfilling that contract.
Damn, you're right. That's exactly why they took 500 head.
Did Sherman have a court order to confiscate the horses?
I asked him the same question. He says he doesn't need a court order. He said he has the authority to issue his own court order.
He's lying. Not even a federal marshal could confiscate an entire herd of horses on his own initiative.
What about this herd management law? Would he be able to use it to get a court order that would allow him to confiscate Kitty Wellington's horses?
Let me check something.
Gilmore walked over to his bookshelf and took down a book called Codes for the Territory of Idaho. After looking through it for a moment, he shook his head.
There's no judge in the territory who would grant a court order to allow that. For all intents and purposes, this is absolutely meaningless.
What do you mean, meaningless?
I mean, it would have no effect on Mrs. Wellington. Listen to this. This is the next paragraph, paragraph 25, subparagraph 3/3. Any landowner owning more than 20% of the land in said proposed herd district, and who has a herd that is separated by more than 2 miles from a herd of dissimilar stock, who is a resident in and qualified elector of the territory of Idaho, is not subject to the herd law, unless special petition is made and filed by landowners whose aggregate holdings total more than 50% of the land in said district. Such petition, if granted, shall be served upon the landowner by the county sheriff or his deputy.
Well, I haven't served any such notice.
Well, then if notice has not been served, and Sherman really did take the horses, he stole them. That means you can arrest him and the entire posse.
Yeah, I guess I could, couldn't I? Or maybe I can just show him the error of his ways. Mr. Gilmore, would you copy that law out on a piece of paper for me so I can show it to Sherman?
I'll be glad to, Marshal, but what will that accomplish? If Sherman knows about the part of the law that he showed you, the part he uses justification to steal Mrs. Wellington's horses, then you can bet he knows about this part of the law.
Yes, but at least this way, he'll realize I know about this part of the law as well.
It was mid-afternoon by the time Matt and the other riders from Coventry on the Snake managed to retrieve the horses and put them back in the field where they were being held, pending the shipment to Chicago. As soon as all the horses were recovered, Tyrone detailed some of the men to repair the fence the auxiliary peace officers had destroyed when they took the horses. Kitty and Matt sat their horses looking out over the pasture.
I don't understand. I thought Pope Terrell was behind all this. But he's dead, and the rustling continues.
Do you remember in the cafe yesterday when I pointed out the head of the auxiliary peace officers to you? I told you it was going to be trouble.
Yes, I remember.
The 4 men I killed recovering the herd were wearing the uniforms and badges of the auxiliary peace officers.
Oh, Matt, have I gotten you in trouble with the law? If I have, I'll never be able to forgive myself.
If so, it won't be the first time I've come close to the line, but don't worry about it. Whether they're wearing badges or not, I don't believe for a minute that they're actually law officers.
Where are they now? The men who stole the horses, I mean.
Tyrone sent Prue back out with the wagon to pick up the bodies. I'll take them into town tonight.
What are you going to do with them?
I'll figure something out.
Crack Kingsley rode past the sand spur. He wanted very much to stop and have a beer and maybe visit a little with one of the women. But he told Matt he would come straight to town, make his purchase, then return immediately. Crack could understand the need to get back to the ranch, especially if the rustlers hit them again tonight. What he couldn't understand was why Matt sent him to town to make such a frivolous purchase. Dismounting in front of the Medbury Mercantile, Crack stepped up on the porch, then went inside. He passed by the candy shelf and saw a large jar of whorehound candy. He thought of Hank, who always bought himself a stick anytime he came to town, and asked one of the others to buy it for him if they came to town and he didn't. The thought caused Crack to experience a moment of melancholy. In memory of Hank, he reached down into the jar and pulled out a penny stick. He walked up to the counter holding the stick of candy.
Hello, Crack. How's Mrs. Wellington getting along?
She's doing just fine, Mr. Dunnigan. I'll be sure and tell her you was asking about her.
You do that.
Dunnigan pointed to the stick of candy.
You didn't ride all the way into town just to spend a penny, did you?
What?
Crack held up the stick of candy and looked at it.
Oh, no, sir. I just picked this up on account of Hank.
Hank? Isn't he,
dead. Yes, sir. Hank's dead, all right. But you mind how much he loved Whorehound?
I sure do. That boy bought him a piece every time he come in here.
Well, sir, this here candy is for him. Sort of a way I've got of remembering him.
I understand. Now, what else can I do for you?
It's coming up on the 4th of July. I was just wondering if you had any of them fireworks in yet.
I sure do. Out here, you got to order them things early if you want to make sure you get them in time for the 4th. What you need?
I need me a skyrocket.
A skyrocket? Just one?
Yes, sir, just one will do me.
All right.
Dunnigan walked down behind the counter until he came to the fireworks shelf. He picked up one rocket and brought it back and showed it to Crack.
Will this leave a trail when it goes up?
Indeed it will. If you send this thing up in the night, it'll leave a shower of sparks behind it. Then, when it gets to the top, it'll burst open into a whole bunch of little balls of different colored lights.
Well, I'll take it.
Is this all you want? I got me a lot of firecrackers, too. You can't hardly celebrate the 4th of July without you set off a bunch of firecrackers.
Well, maybe I'll come back before the 4th and get some of them, but for right now, this here rocket is all I want.
All right. The rocket and the piece of whorehound candy come to 11 cents.
Crack paid for his purchase, put the rocket and half a piece of the candy in a sack, stuck the other half piece in his mouth, then went back outside. He saw a couple of cowboys he knew from a neighboring ranch, Snort Bigelow and Dingus Whaley. They were standing near the watering trough.
Hey, fellas. What you doing out here? Anytime you boys come into town, you near about always go to the Sandspur.
Snort shook his head.
Ain't no fun at the Sandspur right now.
Dingus nodded in agreement.
Yeah, not as long as them deputies are here. They go into the Sandspur and all the fun comes out of it.
I don't know what they're after, but I'll sure as hell be happy when they leave.
What are you doing in town, Crack?
I just come into town to buy something.
Whorehound candy? You coming to town to buy whorehound candy?
Yeah, well, I like it. What's wrong with that?
Ain't nothing wrong with it. I like it, too. But I don't think I'd ride 5 miles just to get me some.
Well, maybe you just don't like it as much as I do. You boys take it easy now, you hear?
Matt looked down at the rifle pit that lay deep enough to stand in and wide enough for 3 men to occupy.
We dug one here and another one over there.
Tyrone pointed to the other pit 50 yards away.
Good job.
This way we've got the entrance covered no matter which side the rustlers might come in on.
Move some brush over in front of them.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm going back to the house. When Prue gets back with the bodies, have them come up.
Jake looked in the direction of an approaching rider.
Here comes Crack.
Matt waited until Crack got there before he left for the house.
Did you get the rocket?
Yeah, I got it.
Good. Now go back to the cookhouse. Have the cook fix you a lunch to take with you.
Take where?
You see that bluff there?
Matt pointed to a rather prominent feature about 2 miles away.
I want you to go up onto that bluff and stay. And stay awake. If you have to, get yourself a handful of coffee beans and chew on them tonight. From there, you'll have a good view of anyone who approaches the ranch. If you see anyone coming, shoot the rocket off.
Ah, it's a signal. I was wondering what you were wanting it for.
Don't shoot it until they pass you, though. You don't want them to know they've been seen.
Jake pulled off his hat to wipe his brow.
How do you know they'll be coming tonight?
I plan to leave them a message. Once they get it, they'll come.
Matt was sitting at the dining room table with Kitty when Prue came in.
Excuse me, but Tyrone said you wanted to see me.
Did you recover the bodies?
All 4 of them. With their hats, just like you said.
Are they still in the buckboard?
Yeah. I tell you the truth, Matt. I don't know why we're going to all the trouble. If it was up to me, I'd let them just lie out there and rot.
Have you had your supper?
Not yet.
Have the cook make you a sandwich. Then bring it with you. You can eat it on the way into town.
We're actually going to do it, aren't we? We're taking these bastards into town to the Undertaker.
Something like that.
Clay Sherman sat at the kitchen table in the hotel's largest, most elegant room. Under the soft, golden glow of a lantern, he figured his profit on the back of an envelope. Marcus Kincaid paid him $10,000 to make certain Kitty Wellington did not get her horses to market in time to save her ranch. But Kincaid made no reference of any kind as to the disposition of the horses. Sherman hadn't mentioned the horses either. He had his own plans for them. Polk had already made an arrangement to move the horses at $50 a head, though he had told everyone but Sherman that he was only getting $25 a head.
A tidy sum.
$50 a head for 500 horses was $25,000. That $25,000 plus the $10,000 he was getting from Kincaid would make this, by far, the most profitable business arrangement Sherman ever entered into. Smiling, Sherman drew a circle around the figure. $35,000. Then he folded the envelope and stuck it down in his pocket. Glancing toward the window, he saw that it had grown very dark outside, and since he had not yet had his supper, he decided he would have it now. Sherman extinguished the lantern, then stepped out into the hallway and started down the stairs. The wall sconces in the lobby had not yet been lit, so it seemed darker than usual. The only lantern providing any light was sitting on the front desk.
Clerk, why haven't you lit the wall sconces yet?
Sherman did not get a reply.
Reinhardt, where are you?
Of course, when one thought about it, there was really no reason for the clerk to be at his desk at all. The auxiliary peace officer's posse occupied every room but one, and nobody was likely to occupy the remaining room. Sherman stepped up to the front desk and banged his hand down on the call bell.
Reinhardt?
He didn't care whether the hotel had any new guests or not. As far as he was concerned, the clerk should still be at work, if for no other reason than to provide services for Sherman and his men. And one of the things he should do was light the sconce lights in the lobby. A man in Sherman's position couldn't help but make enemies, and dark lobbies were places that a man with enemies should avoid, when possible.
You competent fool. I'll light the lanterns myself.
Reaching over the desk, Sherman found a box of matches, then he turned and started for the wall sconces. That was when he saw them. Four of his men sat in chairs in the lobby. The chairs stood arranged in a square as if the four were engaged in a friendly game of cards. But there were no cards and there was no card table. Just the four men sitting in a square looking at each other.
What are you men doing here, just sitting in the dark? Did they run you out of the saloon? Why, you men aren't very... Dear Lord.
Scraggs!
Sherman ran up the stairs, taking them two at a time.
Scraggs! Grimes! Schneider! Anderson! Anybody!
Nobody answered his calls, and he moved down the hallway, opening every door and looking inside. Then, deciding they must all be over at the saloon, he ran back downstairs and trotted up the street to the saloon. Celebrating the fact that they had taken the 500 horses without any problems, the posse members were quite animated tonight. As a result, the saloon was more lively than usual. However, their presence still seemed to intimidate the rest of the town because there were very few in the saloon other than Sherman's men.
Scraggs, damn it, what the hell happened?
Everyone in the saloon stared at Sherman in curiosity.
What are you talking about, Colonel?
You know damn well what I'm talking about.
Sherman pointed toward the hotel.
They're down there now, just sitting in the lobby of the hotel.
Who's down there?
You know who. I'm talking about Garrison, Edwards, Reed, and Kennison. They're in the lobby, all four of them, just sitting there as plain as you please.
What? What the hell did they come back for? They got no business being back here. They were supposed to stay with the herd until tomorrow. Don't worry, Colonel. I'll take care of it.
How?
What do you mean? I'm going to send their asses back into the field.
You can't do that.
Why not?
Because they're dead. All four of them are dead.
As soon as Matt and Prue returned from town, Matt mounted Spirit and rode out to the rifle pits. Tyrone and all the ranch hands, except for Crack, were gathered around one of the pits drinking coffee. The fire for the coffee was down in one of the pits, so it didn't show.
Good idea to keep the fire down there. Now, you boys know what to do, right? As soon as you see the rocket, get down into your pits. You all have rifles?
Every one of us.
Jake looked up from his coffee.
Where are you going to be, Matt?
I'm going up with Crack. After they pass us by, I'm going to come down behind them.
That's going to be dangerous, isn't it? I mean, if you're behind them, you're likely to be in our line of fire.
Matt pulled a cigar from his shirt pocket.
I'm going to be smoking this cigar. I'll be the only one with a glow. Don't shoot at the glow.
Right.
Are you sure they're coming tonight?
Yeah, I'm sure. Prue and I left them a calling card.
A calling card?
Wait till I tell you what we did. You thought we were taking the bodies to the Undertaker? Well, no, sir.
At the sand spur, only three customers remained beside the members of the peace officer's posse, and they had withdrawn into a back corner of the room as Sherman vented his anger with his men. Charlie had signaled for the two girls, Jenny and Susie, to come behind the bar with him, and they stood there watching in stunned silence. Charlie had reached under the bar and wrapped his hand around a double-barreled 12-gauge shotgun. He hadn't shown the gun to anyone and didn't intend to, except as a last resort. Jenny trembled as she turned to Charlie.
Charlie, what's going on? I'm scared.
Shh! Hush, girl. It's best we just stay out of this for now.
I don't understand. Who the hell would bring four dead bodies into the hotel and just set them there?
Well, I'm just guessing, Scraggs. But I'd say it was the same one who killed them. It was Jensen, you idiot.
No, there was four of them left guarding the horses. There ain't no way Jensen could have killed all four of them.
Funny how you'd say that, Scraggs, seeing as how he braced four of you in this saloon.
No, now, that was no way near the same thing, and you know it. We was all four of us sitting down so as not to be able to get to our guns. Garrison and the others was out in the open.
It doesn't make any difference. A man is a devil.
What happened to the horses?
I'm sure he took them back. But we're going to go after them.
No, you aren't.
Marshal Sparks stepped through the bat wings.
What do you mean, no, we aren't?
If you go after those horses again, you'll be stealing them, not confiscating them.
Marshal Sparks held up a piece of paper.
This is the herd management law you were talking about. Without a specific order to the contrary, there's nothing to prevent Kitty Wellington from raising horses on her ranch. And if you actually took horses from her, you're guilty of rustling.
But my authority comes from the territorial capital at Boise, which means my authority is greater than yours. So I'm ordering you now to get out of our way and let us do our duty.
And I'm ordering you out of my town. I want you and all your men out of the hotel now. That includes the four dead men in the lobby. If you leave them here, they're going to be buried in Potter's Corner.
That don't take orders from a town marshal. Get out of my way.
Marshal Sparks started toward his gun, but that was a fatal mistake.
Let's go!
What are we going to do with the marshal?
Sherman looked down at him.
Leave him. Let the town bury him in their Potter's Corner. There'll be more of them lying there by the end of this night.
Crack and Matt were both on top of the bluff waiting for Sherman and his posse to come try and reclaim the herd. Looking back toward the north through the dark strained the eyes, and it made it difficult to stay alert. Matt and Crack took turns keeping watch. For the moment, Crack stood watch. He had been staring unceasingly to the north for at least the last half hour.
Here they come.
Matt had been sitting on a rock, sucking on the soft under part of a grass stem when Crack spoke.
You sure?
Matt stood up and moved to the edge of the bluff to look north.
I don't see anything.
That's because they just rode down into a little draw. They'll come out in a second, and you'll be able to see them.
Yeah, I can hear them now.
Matt stared in the same direction for a moment longer, then saw them emerge.
Get your rocket ready, but don't light it until I tell you.
Matt, it looks like there's at least a dozen of them, and we only got four men down there.
It'll be all right. Sherman doesn't know we only have four men, and believe me, if they start shooting from the rifle pits, Sherman will think he's facing an army.
Yeah. I forgot about the rifle pits.
We're getting closer.
Matt struck a match and, shielding the light from view, lit his cigar. Then, with his cigar lit, he swung into the saddle and rode out to the edge of the bluff and looked down. The posse had passed, but they were still a good mile away from Tyrone and the others.
All right, send up the rocket.
Crack lit the fuse to the rocket. It sputtered for a moment and then raced up into the sky, leaving a long, glowing, golden tail streaming out behind it. Even as he heard the hiss of the rocket's ascent, Matt slapped his legs against Spirit's side and started down the trail to the valley floor below.
Tyrone! There goes the rocket!
All right, you and Clem get over there in the other pit. Jake, you stay here with me.
Yeah. Come on, Clem.
The two cowboys started across the field. Pooh stopped and looked back.
River! Matt's gonna be out there smoking a cigar. Don't shoot at the glow.
I ain't gonna shoot at the glow. But I tell you the truth, you couldn't get me out there for $1,000. I mean, even if we don't shoot at him, there's gonna be bullets flying around.
There's gonna be bullets flying around everywhere. So hurry on over there. Remember to keep your head down.
Oh! Hold here for a moment.
Sherman had 12 riders with him, and they all stopped on his order.
Hold your pistols and be ready. Spread out. Go in a press.
What if we see someone?
If you see anyone, kill them.
Even before they shoot at us? You're always wanting them to shoot at us first.
They killed 4 of our men, didn't they? That means they already shot at us.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
We'll go in at a gallop. It'll be a regular cavalry charge. I'd like to see how a bunch of cowboys are going to be able to handle that.
Sherman moved slightly out front, then looked back at his men and waited until they were spread out 12 abreast. Then he turned back toward the field and brought his hand down sharply. When Matt saw the posse begin its cavalry charge, he urged Spirit into a ground-eating gallop.
Come on, Spirit.
He rode in between the two riders at the left end of the line, and as it happened, one of them had been sitting at the table with Scraggs when he confronted him.
Hey! Where are we going? It's Jensen!
Both of the riders turned their pistols toward Matt. Matt hauled back on Spirit, and the horse came to an almost immediate stop just as the two men fired. Both men fell from their saddles, having shot each other. Hearing the gunshots, but not realizing what happened, Sherman attacked.
Hi-ya!
Bright muzzle flashes from pistols and rifles lit up the night as the battle was joined. Although the posse had superior numbers to the Coventry riders, the advantage was to the latter. The rifle pits not only gave them cover, it also gave them concealment, where Sherman's men were riding in the open without cover and concealed only somewhat by the darkness. The bullets flew thick as if someone had struck a hornet's nest, and 4 more posse men went down. Within less than a minute, the number of men riding with Sherman had been reduced by half.
We'll all be killed!
Scraggs turned his horse away from the charge.
Scraggs, you coward! Come back here!
In his rage, Sherman shot Scraggs. Now there were only 6 left, counting Sherman himself. But at that moment, Sherman made the same decision Scraggs had made a moment earlier. If they stayed here, they were all going to be killed.
All back!
Sherman wheeled his horse around. The others broke off the attack, then turned and chased after their leader. Matt watched them gallop away. For a moment, Matt contemplated going after them, but they no longer presented a threat to the horses or to the ranch, so Matt let them go, deciding instead to check with Tyrone to see how the men had done during the brief but ferocious gun battle. He rode in slowly, puffing on the cigar to keep the tip bright. Evidently, it was working because the rifle stayed silent.
Tyrone, it's me!
Yeah, we didn't figure the cigar was floating in by itself. Come on in, Matt.
Matt crossed the last few yards, then saw Tyrone standing alongside the pit. Tyrone was the only one standing, and for a moment, Matt was concerned.
Where are the others?
Oh, they're fine. I told them to stay in the pits until we were sure.
Good idea. Anyone hurt?
Nobody got hit. How'd we do against the posse?
Pretty good, I think. There were a lot fewer of them who left than came.
The sun was just coming up when Sherman and what remained of his posse returned to Medbury. Most of the town was still asleep, though 2 men were loading a freight wagon, and Mr. Dunnigan was sweeping the front porch of his store. Sherman stopped in front of the marshal's office.
Why are we stopping here, Colonel?
It's our duty. The marshal is dead. Someone has to be the law for these people.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Manette, take Burke and Walker with you. Get out of the cafe and bring breakfast back to us.
I don't have enough money to buy breakfast for all of us.
You're the law. You don't need any money.
What if they don't go along with that?
You've got a gun, don't you?
Yeah. I've got a gun.
The men were just finishing their breakfast when Marcus Kincaid came into the office.
Kincaid? What are you doing here? I thought we weren't supposed to be seen together.
What are you doing, Sherman? I was just told that you killed Marshal Sparks yesterday.
Sherman cut open a biscuit, then lay a piece of bacon on it. He closed the biscuit and took a bite.
Well, did you?
Did I what?
Are you deaf, man? I asked you if you killed the Marshal.
I did. Now I'm the Marshal.
Oh, my God. This has gotten out of hand. Our deal is off. Do you hear me? Our deal is off. Nothing is worth this. I've changed my mind. Let Kitty sell her horses. In fact, I own the loan contract to a ranch, and I'm going to give it to her.
It isn't that easy, Kincaid.
I already lost too many good men for you to back out now. You hired me for this little adventure. We're not pulling out.
Oh, yes, you are. You're fired. Do you understand that? I want you and all of your men to leave now.
I expect Matt Jensen will be bringing Kitty Wellington's horses today. When he does, I intend to be here waiting for him.
Why? I told you our deal is off. I'm not paying you one more cent.
Do you have any idea how many of my men Jensen has killed?
I don't care. I told you that I want you to leave, and I mean now. If you don't, I'll contact the sheriff in Silver City.
Will you now?
I most definitely will. What?
Burnett walked over to look down at him as Sherman lifted his coffee to his lips.
Is he dead?
Yeah, he's dead. What will we do with him?
Drag him out in the street and leave him there. Someone will come along and take care of it.
Damn, Colonel, ain't this the fella that's supposed to be paying us? How are we gonna get paid now?
500 horses at $100 each is 50,000. You think that's pay enough?
$50,000? Good Lord, I didn't know there was that much money in the whole world.
We got to earn it, though. We're gonna have to take the herd.
How are we going to do that? We tried it last night, remember?
I made a tactical error. We attacked them on their ground, and they were dug in and waiting for us. And even if we had taken the herd, we would have had to bring it in. Now, they're going to be bringing the herd to us. And when they do, we'll be ready for them.
Mr. Gilmore?
George Gilmore looked up from his desk and saw one of the sporting girls from the Sandspur. He remembered her from Millie's funeral and knew her name was Jenny.
Yes, Jenny. Can I help you?
I know that Millie came to you once when she needed help, so I thought, with the marshal being dead and all... Well, you might be the best one for me to tell.
Tell what?
All the posse men are down at the saloon right now. Mr. Gilmore, they plan to ambush all the riders for Coventry Ranch when they come in. They plan to kill them all, then take the herd.
Oh, surely they won't do anything like that.
You don't know these men. Last night I saw them kill Marshal Sparks in cold blood, and then this morning they killed Mr. Kincaid.
Kincaid? They killed Marcus Kincaid?
Yes, sir. They were in there talking and laughing about it. Mr. Gilmore, Prue works for Coventry on the Snake. He's always been very nice to me. I wouldn't like to see anything happen to him. Or to Mrs. Wellington either, her being so nice to Millie and all.
Crack and Jake rounded up the dead posse men. There were six of them, including Scraggs, who had been shot in the back. Now all the bodies were laid out alongside the barn. Tyrone looked at the line of corpses.
I hate taking them into town. Well, with the four that Matt killed the other night, that'd be 10 bodies we've given the good people of Medbury to have to bury and pay for.
I sure can't see burying them out here, though. No sense in spoiling good rangeland by planting scoundrels like these polecats in the soil.
Crack pointed into the distance.
Somebody's coming.
Looking through the arched gate and out onto the road, they saw an approaching team and light wagon. Jake squinted through the morning light.
That's somebody in a surrey. More than likely, it's Kincaid.
No, it's George Gilmore.
Who? Gilmore. You know, that little lawyer fella.
I wonder what he wants.
Matt and the others watched as Gilmore drove through the gate, then around the curved driveway. From inside the house, Kitty had seen him as well, and now she came out to greet him. Matt walked over to join her.
Mr. Gilmore, what a pleasant surprise.
Mrs. Wellington, Mr. Jensen.
Gilmore took out a handkerchief and wiped the sweat from his face.
I wish I had better news to report.
What is it?
Mr. Kincaid is dead.
Marcus dead? How?
Clay Sherman killed him. Sherman also killed Marshal Sparks.
Oh, my.
Right now, Sherman and his men have taken over the town. Jenny heard some of them talking. I believe it is their plan to ambush you when you come to town, then confiscate the herd.
Confiscate? Is that a fancy name for stealing?
To be truthful, it is nothing but stealing. Sherman is using something called the Herd Management Law as his authority, but it would never stand up to scrutiny.
I've never heard of this law.
Now, it's a law that nominally prohibits someone from raising anything but cattle in a district that's set aside for cattle.
If I was violating the law, why didn't someone tell me?
Well, it was not to Marcus Kincaid's advantage for you to be in concurrence with the law. That's why he hired Sherman to enforce the law and thus prevent you from fulfilling your contract with the army.
But you said Sherman killed Marcus.
Yes, he did.
Why?
I'm not sure. Evidently, they had a falling out of some sort.
Mr. Gilmore, do you have any idea what Sherman has in mind now?
Yes, I do. He plans to set up an ambush for you. I believe he intends to kill every one of you when you come to town and then take the herd to Chicago himself.
That's it. We aren't going into town.
Kitty, do you think if we don't go to town, they'll just go away?
Oh, I don't know what I think.
You hired me to see to it that your horses get to Chicago. Why don't you just let me do my job?
I told you, Matt, these men are my family. I lost Hank and Timmy. I don't want any of the others to be killed.
I'll handle it. There's no need for any of the men to go into town.
What are you talking about? I don't want you killed either. And you can't go into town to face them all alone.
Matt looked at the bodies of the posse men who had been killed the night before.
Don't worry. I won't be alone.
Word of Sherman's plan to ambush Kitty Wellington's hand spread around Medbury in a flash. As dawn stretched into morning, all businesses remained closed. The town residents stayed off the streets. Clay Sherman established his command post, as he called it, at the railroad depot. Burnett crouched over at the Dunnigan store behind the porch. Walker hid on the roof of the apothecary, concealed by the false front. Burke and Carson perched in the loft of the livery stable. Grimes sheltered in Anna Cook's dress shop at the south end of the street. He would make the first contact with Jensen and the others when they came into town. Sherman looked west on the track and saw a train approaching. He watched as the engine came into the station, then left the main track and switched over to a side track. The engine was pulling a long string of empty stock cars with a parlor car attached at the end. The train came to a halt, then the engineer released the steam as the huge, powerful locomotive sat on the spur track. Sherman watched the dispatcher walk out to the train and call something up to the engineer. The engineer and fireman came down from the cab, and the three of them hurried across the tracks before disappearing in the depot. Sherman climbed up onto the water tower, then looked south. That was when he saw the approaching herd of horses being driven expertly toward town.
It's working out well. They're bringing the herd right to us.
Sherman cupped his hands around his mouth.
Walker!
When Walker looked toward him, Sherman pointed toward the herd.
They're coming from the south. Get ready. Tell the others.
They're coming from the south. They're coming from the south. They're coming from the south.
Looking back toward the herd, Sherman saw it at a standstill. At first, he wondered what was going on. Then he saw a wagon coming up the road from the herd. There were two men on the driver's seat of the wagon. Both carried rifles. And as the wagon got closer, he saw four men in back, also carrying rifles.
They're making this too easy. Burnett, they're coming in a wagon. Start shooting as soon as they get in range.
Kneeling down on the ledge that ran around the water tower, Sherman cocked his rifle and waited.
Come on, you son of a bitch.
For a moment, the wagon was out of sight on the other side of the blacksmith shop, but as soon as it appeared again, Sherman opened the dance. Sherman's opening shot alerted the others. Came into town riding the second bottom underneath the wagon. Looking through a narrow opening, he watched for the best opportunity to leave the wagon, slipping out just as it passed behind the blacksmith shop, during which time it was momentarily out of sight from anyone in town. Running around behind the blacksmith shop, he began moving up the alley, keeping pace with the wagon as the team pulled it and its grisly load of dead passengers, dressed not in the uniform of the posse, but in old shirts belonging to the Coventry Riders. When the shooting started, Matt determined where each of the shooters was. Seeing that one of the shooters was in the dress shop, he decided to take care of that one first, believing the seamstress might be in the most danger. Sherman could actually see the bullets hitting the men who were in the wagon. He even saw dust coming up from the impact. And yet not one of the men reacted in any way to the bullets.
What the hell?
A call came from the dress shop.
It's Scraggs! Stop shooting! It's our old men! They're all dead!
Matt dashed out of the dress shop then, and seeing him, Sherman took aim.
Damn! Burke! Carson! He's in the livery!
Where is he? Where'd he go? Damn it, Clem, where is he? You son of a bitch!
Sherman watched Burke fall to the street from the livery stable loft. The man did not move.
Cassett! Walker! Where are you?
Sherman waited for a reply as rage swept over him.
Jensen, you son of a bitch! You think you can stop me?
Sherman clambered down the water tower ladder and walked up Main Street. Matt, left by the back door of the livery, ran down the alley for about half a block, then darted between two buildings and came out onto the street. He was behind Sherman, who was standing in front of the livery.
Jensen! Jensen! Come on out and face me like a man! Jensen, where are you?
Matt put his pistol in his holster and walked up to within 60 feet of Sherman.
Jensen!
Matt said nothing. Sherman turned then and was startled to see Matt standing so close to him on the street. For a second, he was frightened. Then he saw that Matt's gun was in his holster. Sherman actually had his pistol in his hand, but his arm was down by his side.
Well, now, here we stand. Just you and me. Only I have my gun in my hand, and you have yours in your holster.
It doesn't matter.
What do you mean, it doesn't matter?
Still faster than you.
The sun created a million dancing diamonds on the surface of Lake Michigan. Matt and Kitty sat on the after deck of the yacht, eating the meal the chef of the yacht had prepared for them. The vessel cut through the water about a mile offshore from where they had a marvelous view of the city of Chicago. The passenger train raced south along the lake shore.
Where do you think that train is going?
I don't know. New Orleans, maybe?
Oh, wouldn't you like to go to New Orleans?
Someday, perhaps, but not today. I'm enjoying where I am right now.
So am I. I have had such a wonderful time in Chicago that I don't even want to go back. I hate to say this, but I could almost be convinced to sell the ranch.
And do what?
The same thing you do. Just wander around.
No, Kitty. You don't want to do that.
Why not?
Didn't you say Tyrone, Prue, Crack, Jake, and the others were your family?
Kitty was silent for a long moment.
Yes. Yes, I did say that, didn't I?
Besides, you don't want to quit now. The Army not only bought all your horses, they told you they'd buy as many as you could provide them.
Did you hear them say that it was the finest bunch of horses they'd bought all year?
Yeah, I did hear that. And now, without the pressure of paying off a loan, the money you got from selling your horses to the Army, and the guarantee you got for future contracts, you could just enjoy your ranch and your horses.
Do you think you could?
Do I think I could what?
Enjoy my ranch, my horses, and me?
Kitty, I...
No, don't answer that, Matt.
Kitty held up her hand, interrupting Matt in mid-sentence. She smiled at him.
Let me keep my dream.
I don't know. I'm not so sure about that.
What do you mean you aren't so sure?
Kitty, your dreams seem to have a way of coming true.
Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man, Snake River Slaughter, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2010, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Lily Beacon, James Konacek, Danny Gavigan, Terrence Aselford, Bradley Smith, Thomas Keegan, Alexander Strain, David Coyne, Gregory Gorton, Richard Rowan, Joe Brack, Anastasia Wilson, Michael John Casey, Alyssa Wilmoth, Tony Nam, Nick DePinto, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Tim Carlin, Casey Platt, and Jeff Baker. Directed by Richard Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Temeskin Wubna and Allison Thomas. Book adapted for graphic audio by Dylan Lynch. If you enjoyed Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man, Savage Territory, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man, and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Ranger series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Available now in graphic audio.
Trouble?
Yes. From someone I owe a whole lot to. Seems he's in trouble and is wondering if I might be able to help him out.
What kind of trouble?
He doesn't say. But since he's asking for my help, I suspect it's the kind of trouble that comes out of the end of a gun.
When Smoke receives an unexpected telegram from an old acquaintance, he will ride into the battle of his life.
You're going to conduct some more military operations against Captain King's Ranch. I will expect you to begin a campaign of harassment and interdiction. You will find cowboys working in your area, and you will kill them.
But the one thing Major Jack Brandt didn't count on was the vengeful hand of Smoke Jensen.
How do you fight against such evil? When someone wishes to spread terror, there is nothing you can do to stop them.
Sure there is. We can give terror right back at them. They're killing our people. We will kill theirs.
In this one, lots of bad men die. Don't miss the gruesome bloodshed in The Mountain Man number 33, Destiny of the Mountain Man. Available now. In graphic audio. Available now in graphic audio. The war between Dante Valentine and the devil has been building.
Hey, Blondie, you two-faced lying sack of demon shit. You've got business with me first.
Indeed, I do!
Now, all will be settled in one epic final confrontation.
Here I stand, Lucifer, and not all the hosts of hell shall move me.
Not all the hosts of hell are necessary, Necromans.
Just one.
Dante Valentine number 5, To Hell and Back. The thrilling conclusion to the Dante Valentine series.
There is more than one way to break a human.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.